11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope everybody had a great holiday weekend. Good to be back. Are you going to be all right with a full week of work, Cody?
Yeah,
you're
going to
be good. Gonna be good.
Honestly,
are you taking off Friday? Or are you here?
No, I'll be here. I'll be here the whole week, I believe.
Yeah.
No. I gotta be here as a Wittison.
Yeah, we need the full support. We launched the Wittisons today, and we've got a fun event planned on Sunday. And we'll continue to tell you about the lookalike contest on Sunday. And we're going to keep building from here. This is just the first event we have planned of many, hopefully, down the road as well. We got the Royals on board. It is an officially sanctioned fan club now.
That's why they're going to let us do it outside the stadium. They're going to let us have those barbers come up there, let you do the lookalike contest outside of there. It's going to be fun. And hopefully some other stuff at the stadium, out in public. You know we like to.
These are the biggest sunglasses I think I've ever worn in my life. These are obviously the baseball sunglasses.
Yeah, but they're meant to look like Bobby Wood Jr.'s. That was the point.
These are the biggest sunglasses I've ever worn in my life. I don't know if I can pull them off, man. I don't know if I can pull these off.
I think it looks better as a grouping. Like when you're going full Bobby Wood Jr., I think it looks okay. I think if you wear one individually, this isn't the style of sunglass you and I would normally wear. But you know what? For now, it's going to work. We're doing this thing one way or the other. We had mentioned Bobby Wood Jr. is an all-star, so we'll tell you more about the Wittisons later on in the show if you missed it. But as we know by now, the Royals got two all-stars. They got Bobby Wood Jr. and Chris Bubich, two incredibly deserving players who ended up going to the all-star game. And I know the first argument we're going to hear here. I'm going to hear somebody on the text line or over on the YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook chats. And I understand it saying, hey, teams below 500, you only get so many all-star games if you're a team below 500. It is what it is. But the AL saves leader in Carlos Estevez not getting a shot in the All-Star game feels like a rom. And the one that bothers me more is Mikel Garcia. Even though, because the guy he's not in instead of has not played baseball in a month and a half. He's not even healthy enough to play baseball today. So why are we putting him in the All-Star game ahead of a guy who's having a career year? I think the All-Star game should occasionally be about those guys who have those years. Hell, guys like Ryan O'Hearn, your whole career doesn't have to be like an All-Star, but when you have an All-Star year, you get to do it. You get to sit there and be a part of the thing.
Yeah,
so like, that's the one that bothers me.
And he's in as a DH. Look, I'm with you. I mean, I did not think the Royals were getting four All-Stars in, though. It just we've seen this enough based off of usually market size. Right now it's what Major League Baseball and the manager of the AL is Aaron Boone, if I'm not mistaken, for the All-Star game as well, the Yankees manager. Time and time again, we see bigger market teams get more players in. It doesn't, if you're a team in the American League Central, you have to be having a great season to get to that four or more threshold. And the Royals are five under 500. And I understand someone will say it shouldn't matter. It's individual accomplishments. And I agree with you, by the way. I agree. Mikel Garcia did enough this year in the first half to be an all-star. No disagreement. Yep. Am I surprised that they did not get four? No, because I think we see time and time again, a team that's under 500 probably doesn't get four all-stars unless you're the Yankees or something like that. That's just usually how this goes. But Mikel Garcia should have been an all-star. The fact that he's kind of positionless because he can play everywhere definitely hurt his cause. I think even though you should argue that helps because he can play anywhere, but it doesn't. And then, Carlos, look, we've been on this since the beginning of the season. We did our bold predictions, and the one of the predictions
just short of the half
was that he would have a career high in saves, I said, and an all-star. He is going to have a career high in saves when this thing is over, whether he finishes the season with the Royals or somewhere else. He's going to have that. All-star is not going to happen unless he's an alternate. It's tough to be a closer. Hader gets in for the Strohs. I understand people will point to the strikeouts over nine and say, hey, Carlos, strikeout-wise, is not at the same level as a Hader or somebody else. I understand that, but he has, I think, the most saves still in baseball. I haven't looked this morning. Maybe Suarez. Maybe the Suarez or whatever, but he's on a team, once again, under 500. That should be even more impressive. He's on a team that is five under 500, and he has the most saves in baseball, or at least close to it. And he doesn't have, if you're going to point to the strikeout numbers, fine, but what about the fact that he has all those saves? So I just don't get it.
I guess, strikeouts, if we're talking about a job in which you pitch 200 innings, I'll listen on, I guess. Your job as a closer to get outs. The only job as a closer is to get three damn outs, maybe four or five, and help the team win the baseball game. I don't care. Strikeouts don't mean anything. He is one off of the major league lead. Okay. He's behind Suarez and Josh Hader.
Okay.
And his ERA is 2.13 versus 1.80 for Hader. So, I mean, it is comparable. But again, Mikel's the one that bothers me more only because they're putting in a guy who one cheated. So like, oh, again, let's just keep because he's a big name player.
Yeah,
let's include the cheater.
So look, I want Mikel in as much, but like if we're bringing up stuff from 5 years ago, I'm sorry, like that should not factor in at all. I just feel like he's crazy.
he's getting courtesy treatment as a player who doesn't deserve a courtesy treatment. He's hurt.
Yeah.
You don't get to just get put in. And Alex Bregman is not like, look, it's not the courtesy treatment. Like I've just told you, like it's kind of offensive. Bobby Wood Jr. has never been an All-Star game starter. We can go back to that as it relates to the Whittesons. But like, look, I get Shohei is probably going to be an All-Star, even if he doesn't play since May 23rd. He's Shohei Ohtani. It's Alex Bregman. It's a different level of player. Mikel earned a spot. And look, in the end, my guess is Mikel does get to go to the All-Star.
Yeah, he'll be an alternate. Somebody's not going to play or injury or whatever it might be. Or yeah, he probably
Bregman's
ends up
actively hurt. He probably won't play.
Yeah, something like that happens. Also, you know, later, and you know, I'll be curious to see who the final participants are for the Home Run Derby. There's still a chance that I guess Bobby maybe could get in that. I know he did it last year.
We know
James Wood is in it. Cal Raleigh, who's having like the best first half we've ever seen from a catcher in baseball. It's crazy what Cal Raleigh's done. There's a third. Oh, Acuna, hometown. Of course, so Acuna Jr., even though he's only played in like 40 games.
I saw Alonso turned it down and a couple of others.
I'm shocked Alonso did. That guy's been like, that's been his thing.
He's a two-time winner.
Yeah, but we'll see as we get closer to the All-Star game in Atlanta this year. I understand the argument. I think we just know that Major League Baseball, while we've criticized them in the past for marketing their stars, and you should argue, hey, you want to market new players. But when it comes to the reserve part of it, they put their biggest stars in it. They do now more than ever. More than ever, they put the names that they have marketed and the names people know. Remember, the reserves, as you know, Cody, is not fan voting. That is
just manager,
MLBPA, and Major League Baseball
office. Honorary spot this year.
I have no problem with that. They've done that. They did that for Cabrera a couple years ago, Miguel Cabrera. They have that spot. Maybe at the end of Salvi's career, he gets that spot like at some point. I don't have an issue with
that's
that.
Not
it's
taking
not
a
taking
spot from
a
someone
spot.
Else,
it's adding an additional spot. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, that and again, that one doesn't bother me as much. I can't be overly offended because a lot of this is perform better as a team and you wouldn't have to ask these questions, right? But some of it is market size stuff, and that always becomes frustrating as a, you know, a person who hosts radio in Kansas City. You want your players to get the kind of credit that they deserve. There's a reason why you and I are dressed in crowns and Bobby Witt Jr. sunglasses with personalized cut Bobby Witt Jr. wigs on our heads.
Yeah, we need more support for Bobby Witt Jr. on a national scale.
But it goes back to like the Mikel stuff and the other All-Star stuff that it kind of wants to be that way. Meanwhile, the Royals are still being rumored around the players they are interested in trading for. And the one that came up this weekend was a guy you're going to see in town this week, which makes it even more interesting. According to some reports, the Royals are interested in Pittsburgh Pirates outfielder Brian Reynolds, having a career worst year All-State at the end of, at the beginning of this.
Yes.
As we continue to look at it. But a career player who's been very, very, very good. I know that you're going to show some hesitation in this. I kind of love it. The hesitation I have is over the age, which I think is a fair one at 30.
Well, yeah, hesitation. Yeah.
He is a career David DeJesus. And they could use a player like that, in my opinion. If you're just trying to give you a Royals player to like put your head around. Yeah. He can play any of the three positions in the outfield or at the very least the corners. He hits for a good average. He hits for a good on-base percentage. He is a decent power guy, is in 20 home runs, 25 home runs is a very reasonable expectation. And they're saying, we'll have 5 years of control and we'll buy low. And it's expensive, but he's only $15 million a year over the next 5 years. So to me, it's not an overly expensive mistake, just as long as it doesn't go the Hunter Renfroe path.
Right, and that's the concern from people. Now, I would argue Brian Reynolds has just been a better player than Hunter Renfroe.
Agreed.
Has been throughout his career. So it's not a complete apples-to-apple comparison. Now, in the report from Ken Rosenthal, it says the Royals have interest, though the talks haven't yet gained momentum. That was as of July 3rd. Kansas City is also interested in other hitters. But yeah, he signed a 7-year, $100 million extension. That was actually the Pirates' largest extension in franchise history at the
time.
That's
a sad number to be your largest extension in franchise
history.
Pittsburgh
Pirates. I mean, I'm not too surprised. Neither are you by that. Yeah, my only hesitation would just be I love the fact that you have years of control, would just be that a couple of these, you're going to be paying when he's 34 and 35 years old. $15.2 million on a given season. Now, it's not a crazy number. It's not $23 million. It's not $20 million, not $30 million. It's nothing insane.
15 is low in Major League Baseball.
I agree. So that's something to keep in mind. He's a name that I would not be completely against, but only because, as I told you, my philosophy now with trades are they have to be, I don't want Reynolds this year. Not now that you're 5.5 out of a playoff spot. and you're five under 500, and we've seen the issues with the offense. But if they can add a Brian Reynolds and all of a sudden he's playing, let's say he's playing left field for you. Let's say, I don't know. He's playing left field for you for this year. And it's not just this year. It's 26, 27, 28, and then see where you're at. You know, maybe he's someone that you move again down the road. I don't know, right? Yeah. If you have some prospects.
Or the bottom 2 years, that's when I don't get to the number. Just as long as I get three productive years, the numbers don't bother me. It's the, I don't want to eat 5 years, and he turns into some of these players, you know, we mentioned Chris Davis when we were talking.
But just there's
like
no
Bobby
move
Bonilla
that doesn't
down.
Have risk involved. Obviously, yeah. With this many years of control. The question, what we don't know, Cody, is, all right, well, what's it taking to get him? All right, if you're buying low, but he's got all this control, are you giving up? Yeah, are you giving up
Carter
your number two
Carter
prospect?
Yeah.
You giving up Blake Mitchell and somebody else? Like, who, you know, is it Blake Mitchell and somebody? You know, they're not, the Pirates are not trading for Seth Lugo. That makes no sense for them. So this is not a Lugo trade we're discussing.
No, this is a prospect trade.
Unless it was a multi-team trade, I guess, right? Yeah. Like, unless you told me the Pirates and Royals were involved with a third team like the Mets or the Dodgers or something to make a trade happen. So we're talking prospects in this trade. We're talking Blake Mitchell. You're talking one of your other maybe top 10 prospects in the system kind of thing.
Yeah, you are talking good players. But again, some of those players, like let's just say it goes as high as Carter Jensen, a guy in AAA. Okay, fine. He can help you next year, hypothetically, or late this year, I guess, if things go really south. I don't think there's any chance of getting to the bigs this year. I think it'll be next year. But so he can help you this year or next year, hypothetically. Some of those guys, Blake Mitchell, he might not be able to help you for 4 years, man. Brian, like Reynolds can help you for the next five. He's under contract. You don't have to wonder or question or keep around. And like you said, he can be a reverse flip guy if the thing goes south a year from now, 2 years from now.
Yeah, the question would be the appetite of, frankly, John Sherman as well. We talk about the financial one because
to take on the
they obviously signed Bobby Wood Jr. to an extension. They've obviously given out some other extensions over the last couple of years. But
Bubich, Vinny.
You've got questions on
those guys.
You make this trade financially, you have to know, okay, if we're going to trade for Brian Reynolds and there's $80 million still on the deal to go, is that handicapping us from going out and getting a deal done with Bubich? And if it is, okay, well, is our thought that we're trading Chris Bubich this offseason or in season? You know, like, it's not just one move. What's the trickle-down effect? This is like $80 million. Like, I would love to say it shouldn't be a big deal, but $80 million for the Royals, as much as we were making fun of the Pirates
it'd
signing,
be the
like,
third most money, fourth most money they've given anyone ever?
That's a big chunk of money to commit to a player that's not, like, that you're trading for, that you haven't had in your organization.
You're right. I mean, if they're giving $80 million to someone, they might rather give it to a guy like Vinny or Bubich or some of these other guys who also could need or might want extensions to stay in Kansas City. And historically, their highest paid players are local guys.
Yes.
Salvi, Gordon, Bobby Witt Jr. Their highest paid players have consistently been homegrown players. So you're right. From the $80 million category over the next 4 years, it would make them.
Because I'm sure the Pirates would love to get rid of. I mean, they got $80 million. The Pirates would love to get rid of this.
Yeah,
this
they're
kind
the brokest franchise, and they're the worst. They might be the worst run franchise in the sport. And
Rockies
I say that,
give them a run for their money.
While they, and they've got one of the best players in the game. They have one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball, and they're one of the worst run teams in there. But also, like their poorly run stuff means they might be willing to, you know, like take the prospect for the player, and you get 5 years of control of a player. Who, again, career numbers-wise, is a .275 hitter with a .350 on base and hit 25 home runs. That is borderline dream scenario for a corner outfielder for Casey right now.
As long as you believe now he's post-30, it's not just dipping, and then you run into a situation where you're in 2 years, we're sitting here like, oh, gosh.
Is that where it's not – is that why it's not – there's interest, but is that why you would say it's not worth the risk at all because of how much money he's getting paid in the midst of having the year that he's having?
It depends on what's the ask. Like, I'll be honest, like, is there any way I would ask, and I don't know if it's real, can you pull this trade off without having to give up Blake Mitchell?
Yeah.
Because my argument would be if you're the Pirate, if the Royals are eating all the money, let's say the Royals are taking on the full 80, I have no idea, but let's say they are taking on the full 80, then I would argue if I'm the Royals against the Pirates, I'd say, well, then we're not giving you Blake Mitchell unless you're going to still eat some of this money on the deal or something, right?
I mean, unless you're kicking in a few ducats, what are we doing at that? I mean, I get that. I really do. But also, who is it below? Yeah, I get your point. Like, if it's below that, who is the guy? Because technically, I think Jack Caglione is still a prospect for, like, I don't know, a couple more weeks.
He is still the Royals' number one prospect, and he's still a top 10 prospect in
baseball.
But
you say, like, Carter Jensen's their number three prospect, so it's not like
that's
the same as...
He's in AAA, and he's playing well.
Yeah, and he's a lot closer to getting to the bigs than that. But it's like, will a Walters or Kuderna, like, how far down the list can I go and you actually accept this. The problem is a lot of the Royals prospects who are still currently ranked, according to Major League Baseball, as top 10 prospects aren't having the years like that, like Gavin Cross. It might have to come with a guy, an A-ball, like low prospect, like David Shields, who is a top 10 prospect for them and pitching really well. But if you're the Royals, do you want to give up, you know, maybe elite pitching talent in the system? It's just, it's the kind of deal.
I'd be willing to give up a 19-year-old prospect.
Me too. It might help me for another four years.
Maybe Shields turns out to be so. That should not be preventing you from pulling off a trade. I don't know how useful.
Look down the road and it ends up being Tatis.
I understand. You take the risk.
I'm with you.
And I don't know how he's viewed in other organizations. I mean, he is in the Royals farm system, which is average right now, I would say.
Prospect.
He's not like he's their number three prospect or something like that. He's a ways down the list.
No, he's a top 10, I think, guy. He's still an A-ball. He's so far away, we don't even have to discuss him as like, right. Here he comes.
Yeah.
Just more of
years
like...
Years away. We're 2029, honestly. We're talking 2029 with this kid.
But just more is he the kind of player that you can have a conversation around trading? That's all. Is that the kind of player that would interest them enough in order to make that stuff? They just want cheap, controllable guys. They probably happily take a prospect.
This will not be the last article mentioning an outfielder for the Royals, especially if this week goes well. Now, on the flip side, if it doesn't, but the reason why this move is not a complete disaster if they were to do it is because it's not just about 25. I do not want, we just saw Eugenio Suarez of the Diamondbacks over the weekend. I really don't want them to trade for him. He's an older vet that has no control after that. I don't want to rent him for 3 months.
If they were 15 games above 500, I'd be interested in renting him.
If I'm the Tigers or something, it's a little bit different. All right, let's get to it, Drew.
Trash of the day.
All right, let's get to the trash of the day. This one keeps us in Pennsylvania. We were just talking about Pittsburgh. I think this is actually in Pittsburgh as well. This is something that has become an annual occurrence, and it's back coming up this Saturday, July 12th. Drew, there's still time for you to fly out to Pittsburgh. Quote,
for what?
Balls out bowling is back.
Oh, it's back for another year?
You can bowl in the nude.
Has this been a topic before?
Yes.
On the show.
Balls out bowling is going to be held in Pittsburgh on Saturday, July 12th. Anyone over the age of 18, whether you're a seasoned pro or a beginner, the event is open for everyone. $30. Whether you're bowling or not. Now, I'll be honest. This is really weird.
If you're going
and paying $30 just to watch other people bowl the nude, you're a little weird.
Yes. Nudity is required, it says, with the exception that women can wear bottoms.
Okay.
Also, sexual activity is not permitted.
Well, I'm glad they have that disclaimer.
Thanks.
Those running the event say nudism does not equal consent, and harassment will not be taken lightly.
Oh, hang on. Are there? I can only imagine.
No photography or video.
I would hope not. But are they getting? Are there like T-shirts a part of this? Like T-shirts that say
"Balls
Out." Why
would you give away a T-shirt for a nude?
Hang on. I know. But like to take home with them. Like on the way out, they give you like a little a gift package. Hey, thank you very much for coming. Here's a shirt to promote it for next year.
I mean, maybe they have some shirts to prove that you were there. I guess yes.
Or if there's anything to buy, like merch to buy, or if
it feels like it can't be a shirt. I gotta say,
what,
like,
underwear,
like a banana hammock or something.
Underwear.
It's gotta be something
underwear.
Like closer. Yeah, underwear. It's gotta be something closer to the actual. The shirt makes no sense to me.
A hat
is the trophy. Do you think you can get a trophy made of someone who looks nude? Like if you're the winner, shouldn't the trophy of the person look?
Based on the name of the title, I think I know what the trophy would.
What do you think it'd be, Drew?
Akin to?
What do you think?
I don't
it'd
know.
Be a women's and men's championship trophy. And it could be very clear based on the trophy.
You want a nude trophy with a bowling ball just covering the privates? Like, what do you want?
Oh, that's pretty solid.
That actually is really solid.
I just think it could show the privates in this case because it's a nude bowling ball.
Fair.
I'm saying, like, he doesn't have to have a bowling ball covering it at all based on the fact that this is a nude bowling contest.
Someone can use your own painted balls. You know, bowling balls. I think that this is right. This event is right up Drew's alley, don't
you
think?
Can you imagine if we made this a punishment on the show? Oh, my gosh. There's no you'd never be able to prove it because there's no photography or video.
You just have to know that I went. I will decorate my balls.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You will not decorate my balls, period. I will decorate my balls. I think this goes for the same as I would need my own bowling ball. I would not. You cannot give me a bowling ball at the alley. I need to get
Why?
A custom-made bowling ball.
I kind of agree with Drew on this. You're nude. You're putting your... fingers in the bowling ball.
It's different than a normal bowling experience. He keeps some hand sanitizer.
Yeah,
you better have a lot of hand sanitizer around.
It's different than a normal bowling experience.
Yeah, like those bowling balls cannot be used for later that afternoon. It's just normal.
You think the league night, huh?
Also, hang on a second. Before you get in, I would assume you're driving in the car. Nude, I'm sure you take your clothes off when you get there. That's what I wonder.
There's not like a whole line of cars driving nude to the bowling alley.
I mean, you can't.
It'd be no different than going to the gym. I'm sure you go into the bathroom or you're on lane 8, Bob, and you just strip down right there.
You walk What sort of mental capacity would you have to get yourself into before you walked in the door?
Ugh.
Knowing what you were going to see, you can anticipate it and everything
like anything else. I mean, like, this is all age ranges. Like, it's not like there's supermodels walking around, okay? I mean, you're getting, you know, Tommy over there that's 50 pounds overweight with a bowling ball.
It's just about community.
Wrist support is allowed. Can I wear my wrist brace to bowl in? I don't know.
Ooh, wow. Are you going against code? If you normally wear like one of those waist belts, that you see people.
I don't think the wrist should be the only thing you're getting some support on if you're bowling out there. I'm just saying.
It's at anybody over 18. So if you're 19, you can go.
That's weird.
This feels agreeably weird.
One of those fantasy football punishments. Where people take the punishments really serious.
Yeah.
Having to register and bowl in this. Again, there's no photo evidence, but just knowing that your friend had to go.
Yeah, someone else said, aren't bowling alleys usually cold? This is not going to be good for anybody involved.
Oh, another person. Imagine trading seats with the other bowlers in your lane. You're sitting in, does everybody have the reserved seat, or are you sharing?
Yeah, you standing up the whole time?
I actually think that I would.
Like, those bowling lanes, you guys know,
dead serious.
Those bowling lanes are kind of narrow, like where the monitor is, and you can't be rubbing up against anybody.
I'd be standing up the whole time. I think you bring up a really good point. I would not sit down.
There's obvious situations where most people are excited to see another person nude, right? Makes sense. But in action,
can you
like
list
that?
Out those situations, Cody? five situations?
But a body in action throwing a bowling ball feels like it's showing some muscles. Like, I just don't, I just don't think it's good for anybody involved.
What if you're just like the random kid that's working at the bowling alley? Is that the night you just take off and
you have to listen? That has to be an optional night.
Yes.
You can't force me to work that night.
Yeah. Agree.
And it better be double or triple pay. Like, it's got to come with additional pay, doesn't it? I got to be working like overtime or something.
Man, that's a real thing in Pittsburgh.
Someone said, my name is Tommy and I just felt attacked.
Well, yeah.
From the example you gave, that's great.
Yeah, gotta sanitize the seats. Yeah, just what a mess.
Gotta do a proper clean, I think, before you.
So you said this is in Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
This Saturday, you can still make it. Tickets are still available. $30, Drew. We'll pay your $30.
Seems fair.
That is the trash of the day. Up next, we're gonna get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We'll talk about one of the names at camp that will have people's attention, according to one publication, and maybe the most underrated Chiefs player heading into camp as well. That's coming up here on Cody and Gold.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
That's right. It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour.
Brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. Check them out at allweatherdecks.net.
Coming up in about a half hour, we will get to what's trending. We'll also talk more about our launch of the Wittesons today. If you're just tuning in for the first time, you're wondering, what the heck is that? We'll explain it. If you're watching on video stream and you're wondering why Cody and I are wearing a crown and we have mullets and we have Bobby Witt Jr. type sunglasses, we'll explain all that some more coming up at noon today. As the launch of the Wittesons fan club is official, we got our first event coming up out of Kauffman Stadium on Sunday, and we're very excited and a great opportunity maybe to win some stuff on Sunday as well. So
yeah, there's going to be, I can't tell you exactly what the prizes are going to be yet, but there will be prizes. Right, we're not going to just let the winner of the Bobby Wood Jr. Lookalike contest go home.
You get a high five from Cody. That's what you'll get. Did you see the news? Cody was all excited for a second. We got an email.
Hang on a second.
Yeah, we got an email, and usually these are emails that happened during our show.
Please join me in congratulating Cody.
Yeah.
As Achiever of the Month.
Yeah, it just says congratulations. Oh. But here's what Cody didn't understand. Mm-hmm. It's spelled differently. It's a different Cody. Sorry, man. It's not you. It's
I'm not even the first Cody to win Achiever of the Month in this building.
No, the monthly Achiever Award winner is Cody, but C-O-D-I-E. Yeah, well, different Cody. You did not win.
So my losing streak of having worked here for almost 6 full years and never once been named Achiever of the Month continues.
That's right.
I am 0 for how many months is that now?
I don't know. You and I both.
70.
Man.
I'm 0 for 72, 0 for 80 months, wherever we're at this point.
We just properly we properly achieve is what we do.
Yeah, we don't overachieve. We're not Achiever of the Month.
We properly achieve.
What a tease for you.
What a tease for you.
Yeah, it didn't say Alex was named Achiever.
No. As you were reading it, did you like light up for just a split second when you saw Coat?
I thought they were finally recognizing the work I put in this building, the hard work I put in this building, you know?
Yeah.
I show up. I work hard. I want the, you know, I work hard to make sure that the show does well. You know, we try to like work hard to do things like the Wittesons. Mm-hmm. I thought it was finally being recognized, if we're being honest, only to find out it was a different Cody.
Yeah.
Tough,
bummer
tough,
for you, man.
Maybe we're back to back. They're never going to let back to back Cody's win it. Then people will think something's up.
You know what, Cody? You're
already out for next month, too.
You're an achiever in my book, Cody. You know?
Can I be Achiever of the Month for Cody and Gold? It's only a 3-person show.
Every month you rotate it around.
Every month.
Yes. All right, let's talk some Chiefs football. It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour, and we're going to be up at training camp in a couple weeks, 2 weeks from today, actually.
What?
I think it's 2 weeks from today, Cody.
Countdown begins, boys.
I think it's 2 weeks from today in St. Joe. We'll be up there for 11 shows throughout training camp. We'll be talking to a different Chiefs player, we hope, each and every show, like we've done in the past. We got a couple new ideas we're excited about when we get up there as well. And one of the players that we'll be keeping an eye on will be Chiefs rookie running back, Rashard Smith.
Once again, listed over at ESPN, they did their entire article of the 32 players that surprised with how well they did in off-season workouts for every single team. And of all 32 teams, of course it was Breshard Smith, the player I would have just assumed it was based on this. I'm torn here because they have recently shown an ability to find a seventh-round running back and have success with said late round, let's call, because Breshard was a sixth, right? No, he traded up for the seventh. Late round running back who worked in their regard. But just tell me how it works. They've got a vet. They've got Pacheco back healthy. Where does he get on the field?
Receiving.
Enough?
They're gonna line him up in different spots. I could see a couple of packages.
Third down receiving, though? They'll never let a rookie do that, right?
Well, not necessarily that. Well, one, if he's going to line up in the backfield, he's got to be strong enough in pass protection, and he can eventually take on the Jerick McKinnon role. I'm talking about, I wonder, Cody, if they have some stuff, especially designed where he's lined up on the outside, or he's lined up in the slot, or he motions, right, out of the backfield. I could see stuff like that. If you're asking how does he get involved his rookie season, I think it's more in the passing game. I don't believe there's carries really to be had for Breshard Smith. If Pacheco is healthy, Kareem Hunt is healthy, I just don't see it. And that's where I still fast forward to the end of camp. Is Elijah Mitchell for sure making this team? You know what I mean? Like he's on a 1-year deal, but it's
has to. I didn't think much of that deal when he got signed.
Yeah, but now that they drafted, because I think Mitchell and Smith are both receiving type of backs. I think Smith carrying the ball in 2025. I mean, what is he going to get 10 carries all year? If that, like, I think he's more of a receiving factor, if anything. Like,
in a lot of ways, and I know teams do not, especially in football, you operate a little bit less this way, but you do also want to know whether or not you got to go back into the draft for a running back next year. If you can move forward with Smith and have a couple of these like Pacheco-like years, we go through it. And I feel like still Elijah Mitchell's got to have a good chance because they love a third running or a running back available to them in pass pro on third down, the Jerick McKinnon role. They have had a guy like that in that role pretty much the entire time Andy Reid's been around here. And I have a hard time imagining that's not Elijah Mitchell.
It's him or Smith. That's what I'm saying. It's one of those two. Let's see what like training camp looks like.
That would actually speak really highly, I think, if he beat out Elijah Smith.
How well does Breshard Smith pick up on the pass protection? Because, you know, and as long as he's not fumbling the football too, right? Those are the two things that'll keep you off the field. Carson Steele learned that pretty quickly last season as well. Can you pass protect as that third down back?
And isn't that just maybe Kareem?
Yeah, someone says, why are you assuming he can't replace Kareem Hunt? Kareem Hunt is not getting cut during camp. I just don't see it.
I don't think you bring Kareem Hunt in February, whatever it was. It was super early. Mm-hmm. I don't think you bring Kareem Hunt in that early for a guy who is just a nice little safety net back there. Can he steal like first or second down snaps occasionally from him? Sure. But red zone's Kareem. Says,
why are we sure who's going to make the team? Well, at some point, I mean, they're not, there's practice squad eligibility, but they're also not keeping five running backs on the active roster, guys. I mean, like that's why somebody's here. Let's just go through who's. So we all agree. Pacheco obviously is a lock. I think Kareem Hunt's a lock to make this team. So then those are two spots. So then we're talking about two more spots, really. And that's between Elijah Mitchell, Rashard Smith, Carson Steele, and there's some other undrafted free agents. Okay,
I think Steele, just based on how it went last year, the second he started fumbling and the fact that they brought in Kareem Hunt kind of signals the end of his time outside of just practice squad activity, where he can maybe be elevated here or there.
Yeah, the question for Elijah Mitchell is health, too. You know, like someone citing what he did in San Francisco, his rookie year, everybody thought his rookie year, he was going to become one of the nice backs in this league. The guy was averaging 4.7 yards a carry and all that, but he played in 11 games last year and 5 the year before. That's why he was available. That's why they signed him to a nothing one-year deal. I hope he can stay healthy because I actually think he can be an effective option for them. He's more likely to carry the football at some point this year than Rashard Smith is, in my opinion.
I think so, too. I think Rashard Smith will return more kicks than he gets carries this year. Like, I'm just telling, man, I think the special team snaps are where they're coming, Drew. I hope to be way wrong and he's just like a star in the making. He immediately takes over Pacheco's job and all these things, because if he's already better than Pacheco, better than Elijah Mitchell, better than Kareem Hunt, that is a good thing, because those are running backs they trust and like. And I still think Pacheco's in line for a bounce back.
Yeah, I'm a little, I don't know if I fully agree with this, just because, like, and I know that it, I guess, is banking on this one thing, but if his pass protection is good, if he can pass protect, because I don't know what Elijah Mitchell, I don't know where anybody else really sits in terms of the pass pro phase of things, but if he can pass protect, I think he's going to be in more than maybe we think he's going to be, and I think it's just going to increase as the season goes on, just because of what his ability is out of the backfield. Not necessarily to carry. I think carries, you actually might be right, Cody, but I think in terms of him catching the ball out of the backfield, I think he can be utilized in a way where his touches can actually considerably increase if he can be a guy they can rely on, like a Jerick McKinnon, which is the role that I don't think
he'd
ever...
always been a vet.
I don't think he'd ever take over Pacheco's carry amount or take over for
Pacheco's
him.
Pacheco's the number one back for this team. I don't think there's any question.
Injury is the only way that I think Rashard Smith has a
role,
major activation inside the offense from a carry and catch perspective, both.
Do you think that's why they drafted him in the first place? Because they signed Kareem Hunt and they re-signed Hunt and brought in Mitchell before the draft even started. Maybe they took Rashard because they like him.
That was the whole thing when they signed Kareem Hunt. We had the conversation like 5 minutes after he signed. We're like, hey, does this prevent them from spending a premium pick on a running back?
Yeah.
And I know we had Briscoe in here and they're like, oh, I don't think it does. And we're like, or it shouldn't. And obviously they waited till late in the draft to get Smith. I think Smith's impact, if he has won his rookie season, is going to be on the receiving end of things. And that's what I think will be interesting to see during training camp, is how good is that end look? I just don't think it's going to be a guy getting the football, from a handoff of Patrick Mahomes. That's all.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think
seem
so
like
either.
It based on what he did, because he was a wide receiver.
That's why I'm thinking receiving. Yeah.
I will say the only thing I give them maybe a little bit more, not credit on, but at least always gives me a little bit more change or optimism on, is as much as most teams, it's like a 50-50 shot. A seventh round pick even makes the roster. Okay. A lot of those guys end up on practice squad guys. They get cut. They get moved around. You're no guarantee to make a roster as a seventh round pick.
I don't think he's getting
the
cut,
Chiefs,
though.
No, I don't either, because the Chiefs also, as an organization, might be the best team in football at keeping sixth and seventh round picks on the actual team. Nazi Johnson, Isaiah, they took 3 in 1 year that played for the team.
Yeah.
So they are more likely than most teams to do it.
It also depends, we play the injury game too. You know, when we're up at training camp, somebody will get hurt at some point in time. And is it somebody from the backfield? And if it's somebody further down, then they can kind of cover it with, all of a sudden he starts the year on the PUP list, or he's on, on the IR kind of thing. And all of a sudden it's how they can keep an extra guy on the roster as almost a red shirt type of season. We see that play out every year, Cody. If somebody gets banged up at all, it's late in camp and they're struggling to figure out the roster crunch. All of a sudden, one of these guys, specifically talking a younger guy usually, all of a sudden that player, squeaks through because they're able to just hide him on the injury.
This would be that training or a training camp question, but how many running backs do they traditionally keep? Because you can think, okay, if they keep Smith, they've got four: Pacheco, Kareem Hunt, Elijah Mitchell and then Breshard Smith, assuming Carson Steele would get sent to the practice squad at that rate. I don't know if they...
Yeah.
Did they traditionally keep four, the Chiefs? Because
they have kept four.
They will keep four is my guess again.
Because obviously that goes into the, do they keep seven wide receivers or do they, you know, I think that's where the shift could possibly come. You know?
I think they'll keep four. It's Pacheco, it's Hunt. The question is Smith good enough to be on the active roster? I think he's going to end up being on the active roster. I really do. And then is Elijah Mitchell the odd man out? He just simply gets cut. Or, you know, late pick swap trade type thing right before camp. It depends on how Smith looks and the health of Elijah Mitchell, in my opinion. That's, to me, what we're debating in terms of the fourth running back. I think two of them are clearly making
the same
team.
Thing. It's like there's these extra tight ends that are, they're not keeping four tight ends, four running backs, right. Seven wide receivers, sure. Seven offensive. Like the cuts come in somewhere. The question has always been kind of where. I actually think that they can get away with one less offensive lineman for the first time, maybe in a long time, and just allow a couple of the guys they have as super utility guys, essentially. To operate inside of that. But yeah, I think he's just more of a, it's not even a knock. I just think he's probably in the end more of kind of a special teams player as things go on. Outside of that, Arrowhead Pride, as you had mentioned, already looking forward to training camp a couple of weeks from today. We'll be out there listed there. Seven. They think underrated players going to camp.
Okay.
So like, if you guys have a different answer, I want to hear it. 913-586-7965. We're over on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, and Facebook. As a reminder, Alex and I are dressed up in Bobby Witt Jr. like sunglasses, a crown, Bobby Witt Jr. haircut, wigs, and Witt gear because we've launched the Witt Essentials, which we'll tell you more about
mullet,
at noon.
Man. My first mullet.
Never had a mullet either. But they listed their underrated players. So find us on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch. I'd like to know your answer over there. Here are the list that they give. I'm curious where you guys would fight here. Elijah Mitchell is one of them. So, like, they're saying if Elijah Mitchell stays healthy, he deserves his flowers, at least as a contributor. Mike Dana, Juju Smith-Schuster. Which, that one, I'm a little bit hesitant.
I mean, Mike Dana's always underrated, I would say. He just, in general, he's an underrated football player.
Christian Fulton. Okay, and then they lumped in together Norman Lott and Ashton Gelati, knowing that those guys are going to be regular contributors on the defensive line.
So, Christian Fulton, I'm excited to maybe have a chance to talk to him over at camp. I think that's going to turn out to be a great signing for them. It's going to allow them to move Trent McDuffie around. Is he underrated? Maybe so. Maybe amongst the fan base. I'm not sure. And maybe it'll take a couple games into the season for the fan base to get to know him and say, you know what, he's a pretty good asset to have. I thought that was a great signing at the time. So I don't think he's underrated, but I guess maybe among the masses he could be. I could see that.
Nationwide, Mike, he probably is.
Yeah,
Mike
Dana has just always been an underrated football player. Juju, I don't know if he's underrated. I think we kind of know what role he has. He's a nice, stable veteran that he's going to be in the right spot. He's a great blocking wide receiver as well.
Yeah.
He's capable of coming up with a big catch, occasionally
anything,
a third down catch.
I think he might be overrated. I might go the opposite
properly
way.
Properly rated. I think that's what he is, yeah.
Is that a overrated, underrated, properly rated?
Yeah, he's properly rated.
Look, Dan is coming off a year in which he only had 3.5 sacks, where he had 6.5 and 5 the year before, but 3 the year before that. I think the thing we know about Dan is he's kind of what you just mentioned in Juju Smith-Schuster. Mike Dana doesn't screw up your operation. Mike Dana will get some sacks, get some tackles, do the job. He's not a superstar. He's not trying to be a superstar. He's not meant to be that outside of that. Elijah Mitchell, in my opinion, has the best chance to be the most underrated player if very simply he just stays healthy. Christian Fulton's importance, his importance is underrated. I don't think him as the player, I don't think he's being discussed that way. His importance is underrated for all the reasons we've talked about when they first signed him. He allows the defense to be its best. To stop exposing the corners who have weaknesses in certain areas, to get Trent McDuffie back on the inside on these elite level wide receivers, to allow like freedom. Between that and the draft, Christian Fulton signing gives them freedom to do what I think they want to do in the cornerback grouping and how they handle those things. The Norman Lott Gelati one is the most interesting one because I don't think they're underrated. I think they need contribution from one of them.
They're rookies. I don't know.
But I think I need one of them to be like a. But be on my data this year. I need immediate contribution from one of those two.
I guess for me, it's hard. This would apply to Breshard Smith too. It's hard for a rookie to be underrated heading into camp. I mean, how is somebody underrating a rookie heading into camp? They haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. They've been running around in shorts, in that's it, at OTAs and in minicamp. I fundamentally don't know how rookies can be underrated heading into camp. I'm saying.
By underrated, is this in a national sense, or is this in a...
Just underrated,
I think in
going
general,
into camp.
In general,
players
going to camp.
Are probably not getting their proper flowers.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, by if they're going to throw a normal lot, might as well put in Jalen Royals while we're at it. I mean, like, I just don't know how rookies can really be underrated.
If you're going to throw rookies in there, I think Noah Williams belongs.
Yeah, I like this text. This goes back to our conversation last week where I think people look at the entire cornerback room and depending on what their standard is, like someone says Jalen Watson's the most underrated dude on the team. Not sure it's close. I don't know about on the team, but I still think it's weird. Underrated maybe because I think he gets hated on a little bit more. People forget before he got hurt, how great he was playing last year. Then he got hurt and this team missed him drastically.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. I guess by that account, he would be underrated. You know, I don't know if he's most underrated on the team. I don't know. That's hard to say.
I think it's Mike Dana might just be the answer for the last like 3 years running. He might just be the champion of that award.
Turk Wharton would have been one as well if he were still on the, you know, obviously he got the big payday. Turk would have been like last year. In the same light as Mike Dana to me.
I think sometimes we underrate the guys who are the perfect utility players, like the Chanel. I'm not asking him to be
he got plenty of flowers last year because he got all with the blocks. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he did. Yeah. He had the big time moments.
That's right. I think to me,
people probably aren't thinking it.
The reason I asked the question like 2 minutes ago is I think part of me wants to say Nick Bolton because I think a lot of people dogged on him for the coverage or lack thereof ability on tight ends, where I think he is based on when they paid him, but also his importance to the defense and how it runs, like instinctually in the run game, like coming up with some big stops, like over the last couple of years, multiple times, and just stuffing the run completely in a guy that you can rely on in one phase of the game is better or as good as anybody else, if not the best at. I think Nick Bolton in a way is kind of underrated because we look past and see the coverage issues and people tend to give him a little bit of a hard time. I think people were last year regarding that stuff. Even though, how much did he get paid a year? I don't even remember what his contract was. It's like top 10, top five linebacker money. It's not Fred Warner money, obviously, or anything like that.
3 years, 45.
So 15.
12.7 signing bonus, $30 million guaranteed.
So Nick Bolton will have $6.5 million
cap hit this year, $19.2 million next year. That's when it jumps up. Mm. But they could get out of it after 2 years. Remember, that's the one thing. But when people were looking at the deal, like I don't have an issue with the deal Nick Bolton got at all because after he's 26, so entering his 27-year-old season, if they really wanted to bail, it's $4 million in dead cap and they can move on. If in fact that's where they want to be in a couple years.
By the way, out of linebackers, he is only behind Fred Warner, Roquan Smith, Tremaine Edmonds, and Zach Bond per year.
Healthy.
But again, it's only a 3-year contract, which means it's only a 2-year contract. Like, I mean, there's not a ton of risk with it to go with it, but at least kind of goes in there. But yeah, he's paid more than like Patrick Queen and a bunch, you know, Greenlaw, a lot of these other guys we consider.
And I think linebacker. You can still say it worked out even amidst the coverage problems. Like, that's where Jaden Hicks, I think, can be effective in helping, you know, covering the tight ends in terms of the defense, where Nick Bolton does a great job at what he, obviously we know how much Spags loves him. I think it's worth paying him the money knowing the praise that the best defensive coordinator to walk the face of the planet has in regards to him.
That's certainly, yeah, that, you know what, honestly, that's the part where I don't like lose it. I've told you before, I just wouldn't pay linebackers very much. You can find them in the draft. You can find starters in the draft, the whole thing. I probably would have more flexibility inside of that. But if Steve Spagnuolo says he needs him, am I supposed to have a big fight about it, Gold? Like, am I supposed to be like, I don't know, Spags, do you even know what you're doing here?
The one thing that everybody should be very confident in heading into the season is this defense overall, I understand the sack numbers were down a year ago, but this defense overall, very, very confident in what you're getting. Like, that's not a concern. We've talked about the O-line and everything. The defense, I feel like Spags, maybe it's not week one, but we've gone through this rodeo multiple times. By the time they get to week 7 or 8, all of a sudden it clicks. The last couple of years, they haven't even had to wait till week 8, but let's say they have to. He's historically, throughout his career, we did this conversation 2 years ago, I think, when the defense was getting off to a slow start. I'm not worried about, even if the defense had a rough week one in Brazil against the Chargers.
The Chargers. Have we seen anybody? Do we need to pull any more clips of people saying the Chiefs are over? It's dead.
I mean, if you want to pull I don't know if we have Acho's. I think that's where the national media conversation stemmed from, Cody. I don't know if that's indeed where it stemmed from, but people were slamming Emmanuel Acho over the weekend.
What?
He came out and said basically he was questioning the Chiefs entirely. That was a big thing. I don't remember if it was
he just thinks they're done?
I don't remember the exact take, but I think why is it a hot take that the Chiefs are just not going to get, like, the run is over? That was making the rounds. I don't know if that was actually timely.
Why is it a hot take? Because they've been to three straight Super Bowls. They have the same quarterback, the same head coach, and they have a healthy wide receiver room, hopefully, heading in.
I thought that's where the national media and conversation the offensive line, there's a chance, Cody.
There's a chance the O-line's better.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people were going after Acho for that, because I think it happened on the third or the fourth. Acho, one of the days that we were off.
I chose to enjoy my holiday, not like Emmanuel Acho.
Oh, I wasn't searching for it. Just popped up, and I was like, "Dang, this is a take." All right.
Yeah, I tried to avoid any sports conversations over the weekend for the most part. Just relax.
What'd you talk about? You know,
not sports. Life.
Just life.
Everything else.
Life.
I watched some Netflix doc on. Have you heard about the Poop Cruise?
I'm familiar with the doc. I'm familiar with the cruise, but yeah, I have not watched the
2013
doc
Carnival cruise or whatever. I watched it. It's a quick doc too. It's over very quickly. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Crazy.
I mean, I could just like,
oh man,
it's not a great day at the office. You know?
No. I don't know how those people made it through. Honestly.
You think you'd ever get back on a cruise?
In their scenario, probably. If I was on that particular
that's
cruise,
probably the end of
probably
for
not.
You. Would you get on a cruise?
I've never been on
would
a cruise. I want
from,
to.
Okay. Would this deter you from getting on a cruise now?
That's I want question. To. Yeah, I definitely want to. All right. Up next, guys, we'll get to what's trending. We'll tell you more about our announcement of the Wittesons, our Bobby Wood Jr. fan club. We're the senior Wittesons, of course. We'll fill you in on what that's all about and why you want to join us at the K on Sunday.